Oh, my baby's coming home tomorrow. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Baby's coming home tomorrow. Ain't that news? Man, ain't that news? I got a letter just the other day telling me that she was on her way, and she wanted me to meet her at the station. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? In the letter, she told me she's...
Talk about good news. We have Mr. Good News in the studio today. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB. Please join me welcoming Reed Brower. He is the new owner. He recently purchased not only the Portland Press Herald, but I think the assets of Maine Today Media. So there's a number of newspapers. Welcome to the show, Reed.
Thank you.
And have you ever been introduced with Mr. Good News, or isn't it news? You know,
no, everyone
should have a theme song.
That's a new one. Actually, though, the first paper that I was involved in is my wife and I started the Free Press in Rockland. And one of the things over the masthead was we were called the Good News Paper. And my first headlines of my first Free Press were, I cut out all the headlines from the Courier and the other papers of record, and I just threw them onto the boards, and they said, you know, fire kills three, car wreck, maims.
It was
all those kinds of things. And my headline was, you won't read it here, because the Free Press was a good news paper, you know, just about good news and, you know, what there was to do and in town. And we actually had to take it off of the top of the masthead after about a year or two because so many people thought we were religious.
Wow.
Good news has a religious connotation.
And you had to mix it up a little bit. That's funny. I want to get to, obviously, it's both good news and I think big news for not only Southern Maine and I think all of Maine, that this week you closed on the purchase of the Portland Press Herald and the other newspapers, part of that newspaper group. And I want to get to that, but if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about kind of the early years and how you ended up here in Maine, where you grew up, and then talk about your early involvement with publishing and news, and then we'll get to the big news of the Portland Press Herald.
Well, I puppy-dogged my girlfriend at the time up here. We met in the Boston area in the early 1980s, and she lost her job because of Proposition. It was called Proposition 2.5, and she was a first-year art teacher with a master's degree, and she was the first one to be let go when that proposition happened, and she started looking for a job, and she ended up seeing an ad in the Boston Globe, the Sunday Boston Globe. We still have it in our mudway entranceway, hanging in a frame, and it was for a teacher in Thomaston, and she got the job, and
I
just followed her up here. I was a person with no prospects.
Well, I want to talk about that because that's part of your mythology. I've been reading up on you, and it's a really fascinating story. But did you grow up outside of Boston? It shows in my notes you went to UMass, and at one point you worked as a sales rep for the college newspaper.
Yep.
So what part of Boston you grew up in?
So it's about 30 miles east between Boston and Worcester, Westboro, Mass.
Got it. And so you went to UMass, you were a sales rep for the college newspaper, you sold pizza, cookware, you did all kinds of things that people of that age did. And then afterwards, you followed your now wife up here in Maine. And then what was your first involvement in terms of the newspapers up in the Camden,
I couldn't get a job. I applied. I had enough money to last me about 6 months. I had been doing the UMass phone directory. I had done a calendar for the housing department at UMass. I had done a coupon book with a partner. So I just kind of knocked around and done things. And I came up to Maine with about 6 months' worth of funds that I could live on. And about 3 months in, my last job attempt was at the Snowball in Camden. I applied to be a shoveler. I was going to shovel snow into the T-bar. And when I went back 3 days later to ask if I had, you know, if they had decided on whether I could get the job or not, they told me that they had hired somebody else because he had more experience. And
you weren't experienced enough to work at
shoveling snow into
the
T-bar.
Well, other people would have said, "Well, okay, that's a sign," but not Reed.
No, so. That was a sign. It was a sign. It was a sign that I better do something on my own, and that's what I did. I started a little coupon sheet in Rockland, and it must have been 1981 when we first came up here, and the coupon sheet ended up, you know, 4 years later, becoming a weekly newspaper.
So when you mention coupon sheet, are those the inserts that people are familiar with, their daily paper and more often the Sunday paper, or was that direct mail?
No, it was just when I got here, the opportunity I saw was that the Rockland downtown merchants, the street was all torn up and being rehabbed, and it was Christmas time. And the downtown merchants were beside themselves because, you know, that's when they make their money. And Ames was the Walmart at the time, and they had just moved in to Rockland, and they were the big box. And so I put together a little coupon sheet. I sold coupons for $42 a piece and to the downtown merchants, and then I just dropped them all over town. And that was the beginning.
And then what did that lead to in terms of, was that target marketing?
No, target marketing was way later. But it led to me just beating out a living, which is what I was used to doing. You know, I did a coupon sheet. I still went back to UMass and did the housing calendar. I did a coupon sheet in Augusta. I did one in Camden. You know, they come out maybe four times a year in each place. So again, I just kind of beat out a living. And it wasn't until 1985 when I'd gone on one last trip and was ready to settle down. I was 27 years old, 28 years old, and I just decided I got to be serious. So I bought a house, I got a car, and I started a newspaper.
And that was the Free Press?
Yep.
Talk a little bit about if that was your first kind of connection to owning and operating your own newspaper, what that experience was like, and then we'll talk a little bit about how weekly newspapers and daily newspapers are different, and then we want to talk about, obviously, the status today in 2015 where newspapers have gone through a period of challenges, but I think they may be on the upswing. I'm sure you're hoping they're on the upswing as the new owner of the Portland Press Herald. But starting the Free Press, what was that like as a young guy in Maine and an entrepreneur, both in terms of business and also journalism?
Well, you know, I just was trying to figure out a way to make a living and to prove to my wife that I was a serious person, because she was older than I was and ready to get married and have children, and she was kind of waiting around for me to catch up.
And she knew, of course, that you didn't get the Camden job years before because you didn't have enough experience. So that was in the back of her head.
That's right. Well, she tells a funny story that, you know, here she was. She's a beautiful woman, and she's got her master's degree, and she's, you know, I was 24. She was 29 when we met, and her friends said, "What do you see in this guy?" And she would say, "Potential." So, you know, I think, you know, she's been, you know, my biggest supporter, and she's just always a yes person in terms of
being positive.
Yeah, just never stepping in the way, always helping. I mean, she was very, very instrumental in starting the Free Press. But, you know, the thing about it was that I saw a niche, and I just thought that I could, you know, I could do it. And the thing I learned about it, which was really interesting, if I had it to do over again and knew how hard it was, I wouldn't do it. I mean, who would put yourself through 100-hour weeks for, you know, my wife and I call it the lost decade because I wasn't around. But, you know, in the end, when you come out the tunnel, it all seems to work out. But, you know, that's the thing that surprised me the most, at how hard it was, the grind of putting out a weekly paper. And I still work two part-time jobs on the side to pay the bills.
I think that, I don't think that's just indigenous to the publishing business. I think for many entrepreneurs, and I think Maine is a little bit unique in that we have a high concentration of small businesses, family-owned businesses and entrepreneurs, because we don't have a lot of corporate employment here. So there's a lot of people really that probably share your experience. And I, you know, I've started a couple of companies myself, and I've had the same thing where you look back and you look the path you've taken, it's more like a pinball route than it is very linear. And at every point, you face a challenge, a financial challenge, a business challenge. And the people that succeed are usually the people that don't spend a lot of time dwelling on the hurdle and the challenge. They're focused on going over the hurdle, going around the challenge, and keeping moving. And the people that just get to the first challenge and go, "Man, this is tough," you know, that's part of the game, right?
Right. Well, the pinball thing, I've never really thought about that way. That's a great way to think about it, because I always think about moving forward as hitting a wall and making sure that you come off at least sideways. You know, you try not to go backwards. And the pinball is an I loved playing pinball as a kid. And you know, you're always trying to figure out where that ball's going to go and when it, where it's going to ricochet and right. how you're going to hit it with a flipper, you know. And I think, you know, I think you're right. That is the way that it goes for
I mean,
a small entrepreneur.
I tell young people in terms of business goals or reaching their goals, if you took out a map, whether it was a map of Maine or a map of the United States, and you use kind of the metaphor of like, where are you relative to your career, your interest, your experience, where do you want to be? And then you make 2 points, whether it's one side of the map to the other. To me, it's focusing on where you want to be and how you, and just keep moving towards it. You may go sideways a little bit, then you may go forward, then you may go around. But if you wake up every day and you try to make a little bit of progress, you'll get there.
Yeah.
It's like on the highway when you pass somebody who's jogging on the highway, and then you pull over to eat or something, and you go back, and then 10 miles later they're there. Perceptually, you're like, how did that person get that far? They just kept going.
Yeah. I have a thing with, at the Courier newspapers, which I took over about 3 years ago, I met with every person at the end of the first year just to tell them the progress and this and that. And that's the analogy I used. By the end of the meeting, I sat with everybody for about 15 or 20 minutes, and I took my 2 fingers, which I'm showing you now,
right.
And I just went like this. And I said, if I had started going like this at the beginning of our meeting, I would be across your lap and out the window, you know, because that's – then I said, that's how I think the Courier is going to, you know, make it in the long run. We just have to make a lot of slow, deliberate steps and not try to, you know, it's kind of the baseball analogy. We don't try to hit a home run. You just try to, you know, go station to station, base to base, if you're in there for the long haul. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
That is smart. We have Reed Brower here. He is the new owner of the Portland Press Herald and a number of other newspapers, which we'll talk about. But starting with the Free Press years ago, moving up to the Press Herald, which we'll talk about, I think that journalism in newspapers serve obviously multiple functions in a community. They are at their core, they have to be businesses. They're not nonprofits. So you need to have money coming in, money goes out, you need to have infrastructure, you need to have printing, you need to have all that. But to me, journalism plays a much more important role in our society. It's much more tied to the foundation of our country in terms of Ben Franklin, in terms of, you know, a big part of democracy is freedom of speech, freedom of press. So it's kind of embedded in our Constitution and our thinking. Talk a little bit about from your early years getting involved with journalism, how you've approached that. Because I think it's, I don't want to get too melodramatic, but it's kind of a sacred thing. I'm talking about real journalism, not internet blogs and not National Enquirer, but when you have a real newspaper, whether it's a weekly or the papers you have up north or now the Portland Press Herald, I think there's a more sacred obligation to the ethics and the importance that real information plays in our society. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Well, that would be the more recent. That would be the found decade because, you know, certainly leading up, you know, in the first 20 years of my newspaper career, journalism didn't play a really big part in it. I was a niche marketer. I was just trying to find out what the business community needed to market their goods and wares. And I would put it in anything. I would put it in a coupon, you know, publication. I would put it in a, Target Marketing was third-class saturation mail. Some people called it junk mail, but I called it advertising. I mean, I called it marketing. It kept the world going around. So the journalistic part I always left to others. And when I first started the Free Press, it wouldn't have had any journalism in it if I didn't think it needed it. I thought it needed to have some editorial in there so that people would hold on to it. And, Alice McFadden, who's now the publisher, you know, is very journalistically inclined, and it didn't matter how many pages I gave her at the beginning, she would put the best stuff in there she could. But for me at the beginning, it was more about, you know, ad ratio and can I sell it? So it's been only over the last 3 years that I've really taken to what you've said seriously. I mean, I think it happened the day the Courier papers went dark, and I realized how much a community needs their paper of record, how much they need a voice out there to sift through the sludge.
You mentioned to me a couple of weeks ago when we first met that experience where in your hometown those papers were going down. Talk about that a little bit, because you didn't really pursue it. It wasn't part of your game plan, but you were living in the community, and the newspaper at the time ran into financial problems, and either the newspaper or the bank came to you and said, "Hey, Reed, will you be involved? Will you help?" And tell me what that process was a little bit.
You know, we were actually involved in the – I had a print co-op at the time, and we were actually involved in printing the papers as part of our print co-op. And that was my only concern, was printing the paper and getting paid for it. I didn't have any aspirations to own it. But, you know, this is a very tricky landscape now. When we get to talk about, you know, the Portland papers and how the 2015 is different than 1985 and 1995 and 2005. And, you know, you have to pick a model that's sustainable and that, you know, is based on common sense. And unfortunately for the Courier, the previous business model, I don't think was either. And, you know, I don't think you can give away content free online and then expect people to then pay for your product. And that's what happened. And so when it went dark, you know, we basically had felt like, you know, we were the only one really positioned to turn the lights back on. And, you know, there were 38 jobs that we could protect. In a small community, that's a lot. And so those two things, it was almost like a civic duty to me to step in. And the bank felt the same way. The bank felt like they didn't want to be the bank that foreclosed on the newspaper and sent them packing. It wasn't the bank's fault. I mean, that the owner couldn't make payroll on Monday, and the bank was unwilling to continue to put more money in. So it wasn't really anybody's fault. It just sort of was one of those things that this is reality. And it happened on a Friday night around 5:45 at night when there was an email sent and the employees were informed that they no longer had employment. And it was Saturday morning when the bank reached out and I met them for lunch. And, you know, Monday afternoon, the rest was history.
Well, and so now that we've kind of caught up to that period, why don't we talk a little bit about how you came to own the Portland Press Herald. You know, you mentioned that it really was this serendipity thing where you and your company approached Donald Sussman and his company, and it was really about talking about printing and really about maybe being a resource to print some of the paper, and that quickly evolved into discussion. I want the listeners to kind of hear, because I think it's a fascinating story, and B, can I go with you on other business meetings? Because that's never happened to me. That it'd be like some of our clients today are Lowe's and Ford. I've never gone into a Ford meeting where they said, "Oh, we know you want to work with us doing this, but would you like to take over the company?" Because that would be fantastic.
Yeah, working with the Red Sox and asking them if you wanted to play left field tomorrow night.
Yeah, because that is just magical.
Well, it's really the evolution of it, because when we took over the Courier papers, I was jobbing everything else. I had no iron. I had no, you know, in 2004, I sold Target Marketing, and that was my lucky break. That was catching lightning in a bottle once. So, you know, my goal in 2004 was to have no iron, I sold all my real estate. I owned a home. I owned one nice building for my free press, and that was it.
So about 11 years ago, you kind of cashed out at one stage in your career. And that was that chapter.
Right. The only problem was I was only, you know, 48 years old, and I wasn't ready to retire. I liked what I was doing. The only thing I kept was the free press, only because I had made a commitment to Alice that I would never sell it again. Because, I mean, that's a long story, but I had sold it for an 18-month period and had to take it back. And when she came back, I committed myself that I wasn't preparing the paper to be sold again. It was going to stay. And so I didn't want to muddle that up. You know, I hadn't been day-to-day in the free press since 1991 because I was looking for something to do to go down there. So I started a little print co-op where I just jobbed everything else. I used my skills of selling to create an opportunity for about 12 publishers to all save money, and I brought that business originally to the Courier. Anyway, that at the point where I took the Courier papers over, I felt like I needed to own the iron again, and I ended up, you know, buying Alliance Press in Brunswick, which was part of the Times Record at the time. The owner kept the Times Record newspaper, but sold me the press. and the commercial press operation, which is also another business industry that's been struggling lately. And so my goal was to, you know, to make that business strong. And that's, you know, that all this stuff kind of just, you know, one step leads to another. And that's the step that led us to start to go after some of the daily newspapers printing, because I believe that, you know, the core competency of a newspaper is to report news and to, you know, it's the writing, it's the journalism that's the core competency, not putting the ink on paper. And first job we went after was the Bangor Daily, because we understood that they were in a position. A lot of the newspapers have antiquated presses that, you know, to put a new press in, you're maybe looking at $15 million, you know. And in this climate, nobody wants to put $15 million into their something that's not part of their core competency. So we went after that job. We didn't get it. The Lewiston Sun got it. But luckily for us, they didn't have enough iron to do the whole thing and subcontracted a piece with us.
When you talk about iron, you're talking about like the physical printing press.
Right.
Because there's only finite capacity in a state like Maine. There's only so many
right.
giant presses that can produce, whether it's weekly papers, daily papers, or other materials, right?
Right. And the other challenge of the business is if a day was made up of 24 hours and they were all from, you know, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., we'd be rich because we'd be full all the time. But there's only a certain finite. Everybody wants deadlines at, you know, 1 a.m., you know, 12:30, you know.
Or weeklies on Wednesdays.
And the weeklies on Wednesday, yeah. If we had seven Wednesdays, we'd be rich. But there aren't seven Wednesdays, so you have to be creative and you have to figure it out. So, you know, for Lewiston to print all of Bangor, they would have had to screw around with their own deadlines for their own daily paper. So we don't print any daily papers except for the Times Record, which is an afternoon paper still. So we had the... Not only do we have some iron available, but we had the time slot available.
Yeah. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We've got Reed Brower here. Reed, take us up to the last few months when you made a trip or your team made a trip to meet with the management and the ownership of the Press Herald originally to try to sell printing capacity, and then what led to what happened just this past week, which was the transfer of ownership to you.
Well, it's probably, again, probably 2 years ago when we started the conversation about outsourcing their press, because, again, they have a what's called a flexo press, and the plates that are used on a flexo press aren't even manufactured in this country, so they have to be shipped from overseas, and the costs are literally five times the cost of what the plates are for a traditional printing press like we have in Brunswick. So that's where the opportunity comes in, that we can save Maine Today Media money and still make money ourselves. There's enough. I mean, it's a huge, huge number. And so we approached them with, especially where Bangor had already tipped their hand that they were going to outsource, we thought, well, you know, and Portland had been looking at their alternatives, and they just had a bunch of really difficult alternatives, and outsourcing was one of them. And they ended up, for a lot of reasons, just staying pat. And a lot of it had to do with the bank and, the, you know, some other situations where they really couldn't, you know, make the investment or the commitment, you know, because if they had come to us, we would have demanded a commitment, because we would have still had to add equipment and add onto our building, and they would have had to give us a very firm 10-year commitment. And I think, you know, Donald Sussman didn't want to be in the game for 10 years. He stepped in as a savior, not as a lifelong guy that was going to own these newspapers. So he made all the other investments, but this was the one big thing that he wasn't prepared to do. So talks broke down, and a year goes by, and as any good salesperson does, we revisited it. We heard through the grapevine that maybe the financing piece had been resolved, because that was really the one big no-go. Before, we found out that it had, and we said, well, can we meet again? And you know, my partner at the Alliance Press went to Connecticut to meet with Donald's, his name is Ophir, and he helps Donald with all of Donald's business situations. And as I told you before, you know, it was interesting because Chris walked in just to ascertain, was this something that we wanted to explore? And within 5 minutes, it got flipped to, you know, Donald and I have talked about it, and we think that, you know, it would be better if you just took these papers and solve the problem yourself, and became the stewards you know, going forward? Because that's really the way I looked at Donald. Donald never, from what I understand, even set foot in One City Plaza. You
know, right.
He did this truly for a community service because he didn't want to see the papers go dark, and he had some personal involvement with some of the people that were at Maine Today Media.
Yeah, I think that part of it's also a fascinating story in itself, in that I think most people are aware, and it's well reported and disclosed by all parties, but Donald is the husband of Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, and they're both very committed to Maine. I think his wealth kind of came from hedge fund and the financial markets. But as you said, you know, I'm looking at the background of the Press Herald. It looks like there's been four ownership changes since 1998, and that kind of coincides with a lot of challenges in that whole industry, where I don't think it's just the Portland market. I think Boston Globe has changed hands, New York Times, everyone sooner or later changes hands. But Donald didn't get involved years ago because he was really excited to be in the newspaper business. I think he tried to help a little bit, and then it turned out where he had to kind of own it. But how does that work when you walk into a meeting talking about printing, then they call you on the phone and say, hey, Reed, you know, guess what? Not only is there a chance for us to do the printing, but how would you feel about owning the Portland Press Herald, Maine Today Media, which I really look at. I think the Bangor Daily News does a great job. But I think the Portland Press Herald, for many reasons, is the iconic paper here in Maine that's the news source for record. You either have Associated Press, which does a great job on kind of AP stories, but the Portland Press Herald is where most other media outlets turn to for their news gathering information and the stories. What was that phone call like when you were considering, I was thinking about doing printing, but now I may be in a position to own the iconic news gathering Portland Press Herald?
It really wasn't a choice. I wasn't given a choice A or B. What happened is, I think, you know, Chris walked in, they had their 5 minutes of pleasantries, you know, asking about the, Ophir just had a baby, how's the baby doing?
Right.
And I think then they started to do the discussion, and I think Ophir quickly just said, you know, Donald and I have really think that you guys should take this. We're not in a position to go forward. We don't really want to sell it to an out-of-state conglomerate, because what they will do is, the first thing they'll do is they'll cut and slash 50 to 100 jobs, which Donald just invested $13 million in putting, I think I read, 40 reporters on, right, so that they could do exactly what you just said. But he had solved the problem of the bank, and that was the final problem that he was going to solve. He was going to now turn it over to somebody. And if we had said no, I don't know, it would have been a tough decision for, you know, for him to go forward. But it really wasn't. We could see right away that it was an opportunity, and that it's that progression. He saw what we did, what I did at the Courier papers, in terms of how important that was to the community, and that it was a civic. You know, I didn't do it for any other reason other than to keep those jobs and to keep the community lit up. And as you said, I've grown in my career to understand how important the journalistic piece is. You know, how social media really falls flat on the job, and it becomes like the Wild West. You know, you can write anything about anybody and use a fake name and not be held liable for libel, like newspapers are, and not be held liable to do any research at all.
Talk a little bit. We've got Reed here, Reed Browner. He's the new owner of the... will you play a role in the masthead of the newspaper? And if you can talk a little bit about Maine Today Media for people that may not be familiar with the other papers that are part of the group beyond just the Portland Press Herald.
I will not play a role in the masthead. I never have. I don't. At the Courier, papers, I write a column, but even that's going to stop at the point when we announce a publisher. The Courier papers are run by a management team of five people. And I used to go to meetings in the first year just to help set the direction. I've stepped foot in that building probably literally four or five times, and it's only a half a mile away from my office, to get mail, four or five times to get mail in 2015. So with the Portland Press Herald, you've got me here, and probably when, you know, in the next 6 days, I will be invisible again, because I am not going to be the face of Portland. Lisa DeSisto is still going to run the company. Chris Miles will help behind the scenes with the printing situation. But, you know, the thing that Donald did is he did all the heavy lifting, and he left a team in place that is incredible. I did feel the need to meet everybody, and Lisa took me around to three of the facilities last week, and it's an incredible team of people that Donald has supported and that Lisa has put together. They're committed. They're excited. The workspace is terrific. The infrastructure is all there. And if I got involved, all I'd do is muck it up.
I should probably disclose that I'm also on a board with Lisa DeSisto, and I'm a huge fan. You know, she came from, I don't know how many years ago, three, 4 years ago, from the Boston Globe. She headed up their digital conversion and a lot of the areas of the Boston Globe. And at that point, I think Donald recruited her to come up to Maine, and she's done a great job. Talk a little bit to the point that you're either able to or willing to some of the economics of this transaction. And I'm reading from an article that this is kind of ironic. I'm reading a story from the Press Herald written by Whit Richardson, who I think is one of the he does a lot of the very detailed business investigative pieces. I think he's a well-respected, great journalist. But in his reporting about this transaction, he mentioned that 1998, the Press Herald, Sunday Telegram, Kennebunk Journal were sold for $230 million to the Seattle Times Company. So that was 17 years ago. There was a transaction, $230 million. And that company was controlled by the, is it pronounced Blethyn family?
Yeah.
So then that changed years ago, when Richard Connor, who was involved in the business operations of the paper, put together a group of people, investors, and it was speculated. None of this has been, since it's not a public paper, many of these numbers aren't reported. They're just kind of speculated. That last transaction was $11 million. And then a few years ago, in 2012, when the paper was facing bankruptcy, Donald stepped in, and what started as a loan, where I think he infused some cash to keep the paper going, that quickly transitioned into a purchase, take over the assets. That represented an estimated value of $4.4 million. So in 17 years, in rough numbers, it went from $230 million, $11 million, $4.4 million. And then he invested, as you said, upwards of $13 million into infrastructure, debt management, and taking care of things. How would you answer, for people listening or even people who are working at the papers, when you look at that trajectory since 1998, the $230 million and what's happened in journalism, what's different now in 2015 and what's different over the next 5 or 10 years that you project that makes this newspaper group more viable going forward so there's not a fifth ownership change? Because if there is, it'll start with me coming to you saying, hey, can I be your agency, hoping that you give me the newspaper group? But how do you see things different, and why is 2015 kind of a different time and with you as a different owner?
Well, I think it's an industry that's, you know, sort of restructuring itself. If you look at what happened to the Courier papers, you know, from Rockland, they were probably sold 3 or 4 times as well. And what happens is, you know, the first guy sells it for $5 million, the next guy sells it for $10 million, or next guy sells it for $12 million, and so it goes. And by the time the last guy owns it, when it's solvent, you know, if you've got debt service of $1 million a year and the company is earning 1.2, you're okay, right? Well, the industry takes a little bit of a knock and you start making $700,000 a year. It's still pretty darn good profit. But if you've got debt service of $1 million, it's a sad story, and it's a slow ride to the bottom. And that's basically what happened with all these papers. And, you know, what the bank did for me in Rockland was they gave me a debt service that the business could support. And therefore, you know, I've had bonus based on profit the last 3 years at the Courier. And I suspect the same thing will happen in Portland. And my goal in life is not to make money. You know, the goal in life, you know, as part of the, as you know, as an entrepreneur, that's how we keep score. And right. It's not that it's not important, because, trust me, I don't want the associates to think that I don't want to make money, because I do. It's really necessary for us to provide a good return on investment. That's why a person won't turn it over to the fifth person. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think, you know, one of the things that Donald was very careful to do with us is to, you know, set us up, you know, with the infrastructure that we need to succeed. I mean, it's like he's giving you a good car to drive. And but if it's a car that's worth $10,000, he's not saying you got a $10,000 car. But because I put, you know, $30,000 into it, you got $30,000 worth of debt service, you know, you can only support, it's a $10,000 car. So, you know, Donald's a businessman. He was very, very kind in terms of turning this over to succeed. If this doesn't succeed, it's not because of Donald, it's because of us. And we don't have the bank to blame anymore because that's all taken care of. You know, the debt service is manageable as long as we're making money, which we should if we follow Lisa's plan and we're able to solve the printing problem.
You were quoted in this story last week, ironically, in the paper that you ultimately bought before it closed, saying that once the sale closed, you expect to approach the business with two guiding principles you've used throughout your career: sustainability and common sense. How will that apply going forward in terms of operating the Portland Press Herald profitably and keeping jobs and hopefully expanding the service of the newspapers?
Well, I think those two principles speak for themselves. You know, common sense is if it doesn't make sense, don't do it, you know, and don't let anybody talk you into doing it, and make sure the people that are making the decisions understand that that's how they're going to be judged. I don't care if you make a mistake. You know, I've made so many mistakes and I've had a lot of lack of successes. But when you don't follow the principle of common sense, and that points back to that's why you failed or didn't make it, that's not acceptable.
But it's a little subjective. I think every business owner, in the case of the prior owners of the Press Herald or any business that later fails, if you ask them during the process of their management, are you utilizing common sense, they would probably say, yeah. So I think it's a little subjective, and I think in your case, you've been successful with it because what may seem like common sense to you may be very thoughtful, very sophisticated, very intuitive judgment. You know, I talk to entrepreneurs all the time, and in Maine, we're particularly sensitive to the fact that we have kind of a weak economic engine here. And so lots of people start businesses. Businesses fail every day in every category. But I would give you more credit, and I would assign more thoughtfulness than just common sense because, you know, obviously you have a history of success. Talk a little bit about going forward with the papers in terms of, you know, your background. A lot of it is in printing itself, and you mentioned the iron and trying to lower costs that way. Are there any changes that you've considered so far now that the sale closed? And what does the next year look like in terms of the transition and consolidating the number of papers you own now, whether it's changing printing locations from Brunswick to Portland? Is that viable, or is centralizing printing, or where's their efficiency that you're looking at?
Yeah, I think that the only thing that we're looking at to change is, and not even so much change, is to figure out what to do. We have two printing facilities. They're both are in nice buildings, have a lot of room. One has good iron, but it's not enough iron to do the job. The other has, you know, enough room and capacity to do the job. So the first thing to do is just to figure that all out. I don't see any changes. I mean, the idea is that, you know, you probably read too that I keep saying we're not here to cut and slash, tweak maybe. You know, we're not saying that if, you know, if there's a position there that doesn't make sense, it won't be realigned. But we are saying that that's just not our, I mean, the fact that we came in and offered 98.1% of people jobs, you know, speaks to where we're going with this. And that doesn't speak to wholesale changes. What it speaks to is just moving the core competency forward with the influx of new reporters and Lisa's plan. And now she can concentrate on her plan and let Chris Miles figure out what to do about the printing. I'm also bringing another gentleman in. He starts Monday, who's just going to look at efficiencies and synergies for all the companies. And it's not a scary thing. It's a really exciting thing because how can we work together? How can we, you know, it's like if you and I are driving to Portland every day and we're leaving at 9 o'clock, why don't we go together some days? You know, I mean, is there a reason? If there's a reason to go separately because we use it as our time to talk on the phone and make money, then maybe we keep separate cars. But maybe there's 3 days a week where we can actually have a business meeting in the car. And not only are we sharing gas, but to me, that's common sense. I mean, you say that it's subjective, but it's one of those things where you see it and you know it, you know, or you don't see it. And I think I love Maine so much because I love that Yankee, you know, philosophy of doing a million things and, you know, squeezing, you know, a nickel to make six pennies.
Deb, you like to do that too, right?
Of course.
You're all about the, by the way, Deb has been quiet because she's been enthralled. I don't know if you've met Deb Reed. Deb is the queen of Maine media. She's on WLOB. She writes. She ran for office.
Yes.
What's your mode of interacting with the Portland Press Herald? Are you a digital gal or do you read the paper?
I'm a digital gal.
So am I. I get the paper on Sundays, but I've recently, the paper in the last few months transitioned into what I think the industry calls just a pay model or a paywall. Reed, talk a little bit about where you see from your decades of being involved in both publishing and printing and journalism, the transition and the compatibility between paper and digital. And it's both an exciting time and a scary time in your industry. But talk a little bit about how you see the Portland Press Herald being positioned for that and how you see the whole industry trying to integrate and have synergy between the two.
Well, I think, you know, Lisa sort of gets it. So I think I'm in good hands there. What I've seen, in my opinion, I don't believe is any more valid than your opinion or Deb's opinion because, you know, I'm just a viewer. What I do know, I'll tell you what I do know. And again, Lisa already did the heavy lifting here. She put up a pay meter. And I do know that a business can't give away their core product and survive. That's the not sustainable business model in my mind. I'm not saying that some people still do, and I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing, but I don't understand it. I don't see it how we can monetize that. You can have all the eyeballs in the world, and it only works if you're Yahoo or Google. I think I read the other day that if everybody that used Yahoo gave them 20 cents a year, they'd make more money than they are now because that's all your eyeballs are worth, you know, because the digital advertising has just, they haven't figured out a way to really monetize it yet. So what I do see is that we are trying to figure out how to get digital and print to have a good relationship with each other because they are different and they're both very important. What I know for a fact is that you got to charge for it. I mean, if you want 40 more reporters, you got to be willing to pay. You know, I don't know what Portland charges, but I know what we charge in Rockland. We charge 8 cents a day. So it's a cup of coffee a month. And, you know, we have 12 reporters in those three papers. And unless the digital side contributes to at least six of them, we can't afford to have 12. We'd have to go down to 8 or 10, and I don't think that's the right model. And the other problem with that model that I saw is my wife, before we owned this, and there was no paywall there, she would go on Village Soup morning, noon, and night, and she would never buy the paper because there was never anything different in it. You know, so where were they getting her money? You know, they weren't her digital eyeballs weren't being monetized, and you know, she wasn't getting the money. The one last thing I want to say about that relationship is that my wife would have said the same thing 2 years ago. I'm a digital person, and I, you know, don't buy the print product anymore. She would change her tune. A month ago, we started getting the Portland Press Herald delivered to our house every morning. And it's been such a thrill for her because every day she says, I can't believe it. I would have missed this. Or it's all one complete package, you know, where, you know, what happens on the internet a lot of times is you start looking at the news and before you know it, you're watching a cat video and it's an hour later and you've got no in-depth, you know, you may have brushed over some of the news, but you don't have the in-depth reporting of like what's happening at the Bath Iron Works. That was something that she didn't know. Youngest son had gone to Bowdoin, and so there was a rape on campus, which she wouldn't have known without the paper. You know, I talked about the other day on an interview, just a simple joy to me. I forgot how much fun it was to eat my cereal and do the crossword puzzle. You know, I think the printed product has to be repositioned so that we do see what the difference is, and we're not breaking news. You know, that's your dad's paper, right?
Right.
You know, today's paper is we're not breaking news, but we are important because stories like you mentioned with Wit, it's really difficult to read that on your phone. I don't know about you, but again, I read headlines on the phone, I mean, I look at the New York Times headlines every morning. And if there's a story I really want to look at, I hit it. But, you know, with the Portland Press Herald, you know, I've got it in my car so that when I stop for lunch today, I can read it. You know, it's one of those things where I think it's evolving. I don't know if I answered your question.
I think it's evolving. My concern, though, is not with you and your wife being engaged with printed copies. You know, I was a paper boy for the Boston Globe 45 years ago. And so my history goes back to the cold winters of Needham, Mass, and lugging around Boston Globe newspapers. Like you, and I like reading a physical newspaper because you're visually inputting photos,
absolutely,
headlines. There's context. Sometimes a story has a sidebar where it has more technical information. So I think the internet and the digital side does a great job of, as you said, breaking headlines. Something happens federally or nationally or in the state where there's a big event, you get the headline. And I do think that the path forward for daily newspapers like the Press Herald is really investing in the news gathering and making sure the credibility there, because people are inundated with blogs. And my fear is many readers cannot differentiate between, you know, if, and I don't want to pick on Sully in there, but if Sully sends out a blog or if Sully writes something and everyone has access to the great internet highway, I'll pick on Deb. If Deb doesn't believe in climate change, right? And it's like a long, I don't want to go down that path.
We can't
Reed,
go there today.
Reed will give you a headache. By the way, we've got Reed Brower, the new owner of the Portland Press Herald. But if Deb puts out some sort of scientific research she's done in her backyard and she goes, well, no, there's no climate warning. Today was cold. Does a person who has access to that can differentiate that, and I'm saying nutty and kind of, you know, there's love there, right?
Of course.
But if Deb writes some nutty thing, can a reader differentiate that Deb wrote some sort of opinion piece on climate versus Wit, who's a real journalist, writing a scientific piece with the UMaine climatologist professor? And for a newspaper to work, I think there's an educational process where we have to go back to telling people, this is important. It's important for our government. It's important for day-to-day life. People need to be more engaged on the issues, and I do think newspapers play an important role.
Yeah, because I think, you know, what you're talking about is the difference between gossip and research.
Right.
You know, so what I find is that, you know, one of the things that we wish we had more of at the Courier Papers is more comments on some of our articles and our columns, but we actually make people accountable. They have to use their real name. You have to know who actually wrote it. But the benefit of that is that I'll go on to another site that has a lot of eyeballs and they have a lot of comments, but they're all stupid. You don't even want to read them because it's like, you know, what the story you just described about Deb's backyard experiment was very interesting.
Right.
You know, that would be a Pulitzer Prize compared to some of the comments that you read in
I love it. I'll take it.
Nobody has ever said Pulitzer Prize and Deb in the same sentence. So right then,
until now.
I didn't even pronounce it right.
I know,
though,
but
so
you
sorry.
But you made her day. But you're right. That's one thing that kills me about newspapers, and I think the Press Herald does a good job. The idea of anonymous reader comments, because not only many times they're not informed, but many times they have an agenda. Many
right.
times people just write mean-spirited things. Not that I'm sensitive about it, that I've run for office. Not that I'm sensitive that people write stuff about me all the time. But if somebody wants to say something like, hey, I think Steve's position on this was just bad, or I think, you know, I'm fine with that. But when, like, you know, Bobo from Brunswick writes it and says, you know, something about me, or that's what drives me crazy.
Well, I like it when, you know, occasionally I write a column and I get a few haters and they will email me and tell me how stupid I am or how, you know, either I'm ignorant or I don't get it or I'm just off base. And I always write back and say, great, so can I put, you know, your fine letter into the letter to the editor? Do you mind me printing it? And how did you spell your last name again? And all of a sudden, you know, it goes dead. It goes
right.
dry. You know, I'm not getting my email responses anymore because it's so much, it's kind of like liquid courage. We all know what liquid courage can do, you know, at a party. You know, it can actually help you talk to a girl, you know, for me. And
For me too, 25 years ago, and again, it's another story for another day, but if it wasn't for, like, you know, Rio Bravo restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia. 25. I wouldn't be here today with my wife and three kids.
Yeah.
So I'd love to have you back sometime because I enjoy talking with you. I'm fascinated with your personal story, and I do believe newspapers play a critical role in both in a democracy and in a society. And I think that the Press Herald, the other papers, the papers up in Camden, all the papers in Maine, the Bangor Daily News plays an important role. And my goal would be for people to start differentiating and taking real news, real information seriously. And it's from that information that people can be informed on issues or candidates or anything else. But if we don't make that distinction, then it's basically one big shouting match across the state.
Right.
And so I wish you nothing but luck. It's exciting to have the paper go through a transition. I would also make a comment. I've never met Donald Sussman. I've written to him. I've tried to have those same meetings you've had with his people. He's very, very busy. But I have all the respect in the world for how he has managed the paper and how he invested in the paper during his ownership. And I also respect Shelley Pingree. So I wish them both luck and a measure of gratitude for what he did with the paper when he owned it and luck for you going forward.
Yeah, I think I already said this. This isn't an original saying, but you know, I felt like you know Donald really got a raw deal because you know he couldn't say anything nice about Shelley in the papers or he'd be called a homer. And if he said something bad about her in the papers, he couldn't go home. You know?
Right.
And so, you know, he was put into between a rock and a hard place there. You know, what you said is interesting. I think a paper's role is to be the moderator and to try to be as fair. I know papers do take on their own agenda and they do tend to be left or right. You know, I want it to be a moderator situation. I would rather see it more towards the middle, having person A moderate this and person B moderate that and let the people decide. So I think if we can get back to that kind of if that's the model, it goes back to what you were saying earlier, is that it becomes, you know, more of a moderated
Forum yeah. for ideas, yeah. for information. And Maine has a lot of – Maine's greatest state in the country. I love Maine, but we also face some challenges, economic challenges, political challenges, and those challenges aren't helped with bad information. And I think there's a public good tied into journalism where the newspapers should get good information, whether it's on any issue, energy, environment, healthcare. And if we don't have a source with good information coming out to the electorate and the people, people can't make good decisions, and I think that's bad for our state.
And it's also, you know, bad for our state to expect that that can happen without you paying for it. You know, that
right.
that goes back to that question again, is that you get what you pay for, and, you know, we need people to understand that there's a reason why we ask you, you know, for a couple of dollars here and there for that information, whether it be whether you get it on the internet or whether you get it in print, because that's what's going to fuel that engine. Otherwise, you know, between the debt service being too high, you know, bringing papers down, and the cut and slash philosophy of, you know, asking for more but getting less, it's a problem.
No, I agree. And love to have you come back sometime.
Well, you got 72 hours because I'm going dark after that.
I know. That's, well, 72 hours. Well, you said you're going dark. Maybe if you can call in stealthy. And, well, thank you so much and wish you and the paper the best of luck. And I will continue to subscribe. You're getting my $2 in
thank
some
you.
Form or another.
Thank you.
We have had Reed Brower. He is the new owner of Maine Today Media, number of newspapers as well as newspapers up north. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. We'll be back next week.